because I've just been consistent. I've written 3 internationally best-selling books. It's still kind of weird to me, but that just shows you the power of consistency and sticking to something. Even though no day is individually impressive, it can produce an impressive result in the long term.
Guten Tag, mein Kameraden. This is Mike. Yes, I'm learning German. Yes, it's a pain in the ass, but I'm getting there. By the end of the year, I think I'll be fairly fluent, which, let me just rant for a second. So the language learning space is hilariously similar to the fitness space in all of its fraudulence. See, a lot of these language learning programs push the button of fluent in 3 months. You can be fluent in 3 months. It's the equivalence of you can lose 30 pounds in 30 days. When it is simply impossible to be fluent in a new language in 3 months, unless you are working on it 12 to 15 hours a day, 7 days per week, and probably living in the country so you're fully immersed in it, then maybe, maybe. Of course, what constitutes fluency is a bit subjective because if you look at it in the dictionary, it's just, okay, you can articulate yourself well and easily with no mention of, well, how many different types of ideas can you articulate? My 5-year-old son can articulate himself pretty well and pretty easily on a very limited number of subjects, and therefore I wouldn't exactly consider his level of fluency as the goal if I were learning another language. I think when adults say, I want to be fluent in a language, they're not thinking, I want to be able to speak like a 5-year-old. No, of course not. You want to be able to speak well and easily on a wide range of topics that you actually want to talk about. And that, my friends, takes time. I'm guessing 1,000 hours of deliberate practice, not just dawdling, but really challenging yourself, stretching your abilities, and continuing to grow and progress in your language. And I've gone through a number of programs now, Michael Thomas, Pimsleur, I was doing Glossa for a bit, and now I'm on Fluens, which I like the most. And I can say that learning a new language is simply a pain in the ass. It's kind of like building a good physique. So fluency is the fitness equivalent of it is like a fitness model physique. So if you're going from normal to a fitness model physique, what does that take? It takes a few years, really, unless you have outstanding genetics. Maybe you can get that a little bit faster, but it takes a few years for most people. Similarly, to go from speaking no foreign language to speaking very well takes probably about the same amount of time if you were to play it out in terms of hours, right? So if you worked out 5 days a week, let's just say you didn't miss any weeks, so you're doing 250 workouts per year, 750 workouts, probably about 1,000 hours. And I think that's what it takes to reach fluency. So anyone out there that's interested in language learning, don't buy into the bullshit. Get ready for the grind, because that's what it is. Even when you do it right, get ready to put in the time every day and just do the work that you know needs to get done, even though it feels like in the beginning that it's not going to go anywhere. And it's not particularly fun in the beginning, especially in the very beginning, because you suck, you can't pronounce anything, you don't understand how the grammar works, your vocabulary is worthless, but you just work on the fundamentals and then it starts to come together, very much like fitness. So anyway, that's the end of my language learning rant for now. Now let's talk about today's episode. Today I talked to Stephen Guise, who is the author of the book Mini Habits, Smaller Habits, Bigger Results. And I know habits are kind of a trendy topic these days, habits and routines, and these topics have been kind of beaten to death. And that's actually why I wanted to get Stephen on the show to talk about a little subcult of the habit space that I thought you might find interesting and helpful. And specifically, this is the mini habit movement that I think he has created. That's when I first heard about it, was through his work, and how you can use these mini habits to make behavior change as easy and painless as possible. Now, if you're not somebody who struggles with breaking or making habits, then you probably are not going to find this episode very helpful. But if this is something that you struggle with, then it may just change your life. It changed Stephen's life, as you will hear about in our interview.
This is where I would normally plug a sponsor to pay the bills,
But I'm not big on promoting stuff that I don't personally use and believe in, so instead I'm just going to quickly tell you about something of mine. Specifically, my fish oil supplement, Triton. Now, Triton is a high-potency, high-purity, 100% re-esterified triglyceride fish oil with added vitamin E to prevent oxidation and rancidity, and natural lemon oil to prevent the noxious fish oil burps that we all know and hate. Furthermore, Triton is made from sustainably fished deep-water anchovies and sardines and is molecularly distilled to remove natural toxins and contaminants. So if you want to optimize your mental and physical health and performance and reduce the risk of disease and dysfunction, then you want to head over to www.legionathletics.com and pick up a bottle of Triton today. And just to show how much I appreciate my podcast peeps, use the coupon code PODCAST at checkout and you will save 10% on your entire order. And lastly, you should also know that I have a very simple 100% money back guarantee that works like this. You either love my stuff or you get your money back, period. You don't have to return the products. You don't have to fill out forms. You don't have to jump through any other hoops or go through any other shenanigans. So you really can't lose here. Head over to www.legionathletics.com now. Place your order and see for yourself why my supplements have thousands of rave reviews all over the internet. And if for whatever reason, they're just not for you, contact us and we will give you a full refund on the spot. Alrighty, that is enough shameless plugging for now at least. Let's get to the show. Steven, thanks for coming on the show.
Yeah, Mike, it's great to be here.
Yeah, so I'm excited to have you on because I've written about, you have a book on mini habits, which has done very well, and which is a good book, I might add. And, you know, I've written a little bit about mini habits, but I haven't really dived into it much. I haven't spoken about it on the podcast that I can remember, but I'm a big believer in it and a practicer of it myself. And so I thought, who better to bring on than you to talk about mini habits?
Yeah, well, I do like talking about it. It's one of the few things I like talking about.
All right, well, let's jump into it then. So what is a mini habit for those of the people that haven't heard of this and have no idea what we're even talking about?
Sure. Yeah. Mini habit's a very simple concept, something I call a stupid small behavior that you do every single day.
And like, what are some examples?
So the most famous example and the one that I started with and one that's pretty relevant to this podcast is one push-up per day. I did that for 6 months. It's at least one push-up per day. That's a pretty important part of the whole mini habit strategy is that you can always do more. It's a low floor, no ceiling strategy.
How does this concept differ from just discussions on habits in general? Because obviously, habit is a popular topic these days. I mean, Charles Duhigg's book obviously kind of put it on a lot of people's minds. And how does mini habits fit into that? And how does that then fit into ultimately, like, what's the benefit? Why should we care?
Right. So traditional habit formation, something I looked into as I was researching for the book, is based on the cue behavior reward model, which is a fine model. That's how the brain does work. So it makes sense to look at that model as a guide for what we should do. However, it's difficult to bring something like that into the reality of a crazy human life. What I find that's missing is the natural human weakness, which is fluctuating motivation, and just the difficulty of bringing a habit to the point where the cue behavior reward cycle is actually working efficiently.
What is that cycle, just for people who aren't familiar with it?
Yeah, so you have a cue, whether it's the time of day or some activity or an emotion you're feeling. Cues are numerous, and for a bad habit such as smoking, you can actually have multiple cues for that one bad habit. And I think many habits actually model bad habits in the wild more than they do traditional good habit formation, which is based on selecting one cue, such as at 10 a.m. every day, I will perform the behavior of eating an apple. Well, that's actually a good mini habit because it's small, but just for the example, I will perform the good behavior of eating an apple, and then I will reward myself in some way, which might be like watching a TV show, or you probably, I don't know.
Or maybe just enjoying the apple. That's also an option.
Yeah. I mean, that's what I would say, but
I'd say if you need to follow an apple with a TV show, you have bigger problems.
Yeah. Well, that was a bad example because the reward is a mismatch for the
behavior. Sure. But that's the concept though. If it's something more difficult, you know, at 5 a.m., I'm going to wake up and do my 30-minute workout, and then I'm going to reward myself with, whatever, an espresso or something else.
Yeah, that's a more realistic example. So many habits, you don't actually need to focus on the reward aspect at all because the behavior is so small. And just completing the behavior gives you a sense of satisfaction because you set a goal and you met that goal. And that has to do with a concept called self-efficacy, which is simply your belief that you can do what you set out to do. And that's extremely important. A lot of people set goals and then fail to reach them. And it's fine to fail. We all fail. But if you do it to a certain extent in a certain quantity, you're actually damaging your self-confidence that you can do stuff, and that's pretty harmful. So many habits,
you can get to a point where you don't even want to try to do things because a part of you is like, dude, I fucking suck, I'm gonna fail.
Yeah, exactly. It's demoralizing, and this was a solid 10 years of my life when I tried to become someone who I wasn't. And I just tried to basically skip ahead to that.
What's that story? What did you try to do?
I tried to get in shape, actually. I tried to go to the gym consistently for about 10 years, and it was just, putting it nicely is saying it was intermittent.
Which these days is even that's maybe on trend now, intermittent fasting, intermittent exercising. So what happened though? Like, you were trying different things. I mean, what was your key takeaway? I'm sure that's what kind of led you to your area of expertise now, right?
Yeah, exactly. That struggle I was searching for quite a while. My situation would be I would get motivated and then I would exercise from, I would say, 1 to 3 weeks. And then somewhere in that time, my motivation would wane and I would find some excuse. It was always something different, like, oh, my ankle's a little sore today, I'm going to skip. And, you know, that leads to another day of skipping. And then suddenly you've stopped working out and you're like, oh, shit.
Yeah. And then so what helped you get through that? Because I'm sure everybody listening can relate to that to some degree.
Yeah. So at the time, I thought it was coincidental, but obviously that was a pattern if I'm doing it for several years. So long story short, I stumbled upon my first mini habit at the end of 2012. I was just sitting on my bed. I wanted to exercise, and I hadn't been exercising much at all for the previous year because I was reflecting on the year behind, looking forward to the year ahead. I decided to exercise for 30 minutes that day and take it from there because I didn't want to set a resolution, and I couldn't do it. I was just an unmotivated slug on my bed, and it sucked. I was searching for answers, and nothing was coming to mind. So I thought of a book I had read earlier called Thinker Toys, and it's a creative problem-solving book, and I had a problem, obviously.
Yeah, I've read it. I like a lot of the exercises in there. I think they're valuable to do just as part of a routine, develop your creativity or lateral thinking, I guess you could say.
Yeah, I agree. It's a great book, great exercises. I actually want to read it again just to be reminded of them. One of the exercises he gives is called False Faces, and that's where you consider the opposite of what you're currently thinking about. And the point isn't to actually do the opposite idea, it's to more open your mind to the spectrum of possibilities instead of getting stuck on this one idea that's not working for you. So my idea was, I know just a 30-minute workout is not amazing, but to me, and I think to many people, it was really intimidating just because when you haven't been working out and you have damaged your self-efficacy, then you're not going to feel up to doing much of anything, let alone a 30-minute workout. So I had this big Mount Everest workout in front of me, and I was like, ugh, all right, what's the opposite of this?
One push-up.
Well, yeah. That's what I decided.
I mean, actually, the opposite would be something obviously self-destructive, but we get the point.
Lying on the couch with chips all over my chest. But, you know, I wanted it to
going be into your belly.
Right. So I decided that the opposite in quantity and intimidation, that sort of level, was one push-up. And generally, the point is not to do the opposite, but I was like, well, I could just do one push-up because it's better than nothing, right? Almost as a joke, I'm pretty sure like that I was mocking myself as I thought of this. And when I actually got down to do that one push-up, I was definitely like, oh, great job, Stephen. You're really going to make it now. But, well, when I got down and I did that one push-up, it really changed things. I mean, my arms were creaking and few joints cracked, but I felt a little bit different. And I realized that this was a start to an actual 30-minute workout.
And so then where did that go from there? You just built on it like, okay, now tomorrow I'm going to do 5 push-ups or something like that.
Well, actually on that first day, I did a full 30-minute workout, the same exact workout that I could not do before. And that blew my mind. And I did it by setting all of these mini goals. I would set a goal to do a push-up. I'd do, say, 1 to 5. And then I would say, okay, 2 more. Okay, 1 more. And I did that with pull-ups. And then it was time to do an ab workout, which I hate abs. There's something annoying about doing ab work to me.
Yeah, I mean, ab training is inherently annoying because it just burns. And it's just annoying. It just is what it is.
Yeah. So I was really aversive to that idea, but I told myself, okay, why don't I just set up the mat? Okay, why don't I just press play on a YouTube ab workout video? 10 minutes later, my abs were on fire, so it worked.
That's like, reminds me of, it might have been in Baumeister's book, Willpower, one of these willpower books, the simple little trick of it, when you need to do something and you're dreading doing it, you don't really want to do it, make a deal with yourself that you'll do it for 10 minutes. And if at the end of 10 minutes, you want to stop, then stop. Because more often than not, at the end of the 10 minutes, you're already in the flow and you're moving and you have momentum on your side now. You have inertia on your side and you're probably just going to keep going.
Yeah, exactly. Momentum is huge.
So in your book, you talk about how doing a little bit every day has a greater impact than doing a lot in one day. Can you elaborate on that?
Yeah, well, I think there are 2 levels of success. The second level of success is like professional athletes and bodybuilders and people who are training at a very high level. And they're doing so because they already have the first level intact. And that first level is just showing up, the ability to be consistent. And that's where small intentions can beat big intentions in a big way. It's because when you set a small intention, it's a lot easier to meet that intention. And it enables beginners like me to be consistent.
I think it also helps with specificity because vague, you know, if you have some great desire and you haven't really broken it down into exact actionable steps, it can be more daunting than motivating. And we could take it even in terms of getting into great shape. If you're starting out not in good shape at all, you may be able to envision what you want to see in the mirror, but how do you actually get there? If you don't really start getting specific about it, chances are you're going to feel overwhelmed. And even if you do get started, you're not going to be sure as to what you should be starting with and why. And regardless of what it is, it's going to be uncomfortable, whether it's diet or exercise. And so then when you're going through it and you're not feeling good, I think you're going to probably come back to like, why am I doing this again? What's the point of this? And if you don't understand how it fits into the whole, again, I think you just have a very low probability of actually following through as opposed to getting a specific next action, kind of like David Allen's getting things done, right? Like what's the next action? And in this case with mini habits, you're taking a small, simple next action. This is the next action. And here's how it connects to the next action. Here's how that connects to a daisy chain of actions that eventually produce something that in some ways can seem to be greater than the parts. The sum can be greater than the parts. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's if you think about how the brain works, that's exactly why it's so effective. It's like a bird that pre-digests food for its young. The brain doesn't know how to, quote unquote, get in shape. That's not an action you can take. But you can get on the ground and do one push-up. It's a very specific and easy direction for you to follow.
And do you find that you use kind of a mini habit approach to, I mean, you'd mentioned these two levels of success, to first ingrain, and I agree, the first skill, and this applies not just to working out, but to accomplishing anything, is you have to be able to show up. If it's anything that has any value, it's going to take a lot of work. So you're probably going to have to work at it every day, or at least, let's say, 3 to 5 days per week. And you have to be able to do that consistently over the long haul. And that skill, yeah, is the first thing you have to learn. And how to mini habits, I mean, help you first learn that skill before you even worry about where are you going to take this discipline once you have it.
Yeah. And I mean, one mini habit is literally to show up at the gym. And often today, even though I've been going to the gym pretty consistently for about 4 years now, because of that push-up mini habit, which after 6 months, I was like, whoa, exercise isn't completely resisted by my brain anymore. So I know I'm able to go to the gym consistently now, and I have been for years, which is pretty incredible, because I was, just because of my 10-year track record before, of never being able to do this.
Yeah. I mean, that's just the repeated exposure effect, right? That applies to anything. I've written about that, and there's quite a bit of research on that, that we can basically attune ourselves to anything, basically, by just doing it enough. And that could be eating foods we don't like or doing things that we don't like. You do it enough, eventually you get to a point where if you don't outright enjoy it, you become emotionally neutral to it. It becomes something that you do, and it's not negative. It may not be strongly positive, but there's no negative emotion associated with it anymore.
Yeah, at first the brain tolerates, and eventually it prefers the behavior that you repeat often.
And so how do you get to that point, though? Because, I mean, you talk about also that it's kind of unreliable to rely on motivation to get there, because, you know, when you look at the research out there on habits, on average, what it takes about 66 days or so. But some people, what people don't realize is that's an average. And that, you know, this is kind of a bell curve distribution. So yeah, sure, if you're somewhere in the middle, you could expect maybe a couple months, and it's pretty ingrained. But there are people in various studies who are more the outliers in both ends, on both ends of that distribution. So you have some people that pick up habits very quickly, and then you have other people where it might take 2/3 of a year for them to, you know, where they have to willfully repeat something before it just kind of sets in on automatic. So how has your approach helped, I'd say, like, remove willpower as a stumbling block?
Yeah, well, you said it. The research out there on habit formation is not sufficient for us to say it takes this long to form a habit. And I don't think it will ever get to that point, because every person is slightly different. Every behavior that we're trying to habitualize is different. So I don't think that it's smart to have a strategy that relies on reaching a certain number of magical days, and then you can say, I've done it. I prefer strategies that can work without backing motivation or willpower, and ones that can work for life. A mini habit works in that regard, because it takes just the smallest sliver of willpower to get down on the floor and do one push-up. I could do that in the middle of this interview and probably nobody would notice.
What are some other mini habits that you found helpful, or that just, I'm sure you've emailed and social media'd with a lot of readers at this point, that address some of the more common areas of people's lives that they want to improve, which is, you know, health stuff, money stuff, work stuff?
Yeah, the most transformative ones besides exercise for me have been reading and writing. These are my first three mini habits, and they've kind of stuck with me today. And for some mini habits, I don't actually intend to increase them. Like I still aim to read 2 pages in a book per day, just because I basically always read more than that. Just from getting started, you get into the flow of the book. And we all know that reading is very beneficial for learning and growing the mind and so on. In addition, I write for a living. I've written 3 books using my 50 words a day mini habit. And once again, I almost always write more because once you get into the flow of something, or as I say frequently, once you start the process of whatever you're trying to do, you've already had a huge victory in that area because you're very likely to continue.
Yeah, those are good. I like that. Anything with finances? Like, for example, saving money. That's obviously top on a lot of New Year's resolution lists. Save more money.
Yeah, you could definitely figure out something with that, like saving X dollars per day or...
And making it small, making it something that you wouldn't even notice it being gone, right?
Yeah, yeah. And you could even do it a more general mini habit for this one, like make one money saving decision every day. That sort of thing can actually work too.
Hmm. And how would that play out, practically speaking?
So you might be at Starbucks or something and get a smaller size cup of coffee. I know that it's going to be $5 anyway, but maybe it would have been $7.
Yeah, yeah.
Just as an example, something you would have done, but because you're conscious of making a small money-saving decision, you cut back a little bit.
Yeah, I like that. What about the psychological value of not breaking the chain, so to speak? And how does that tie into mini habits?
Oh, that is huge. And that's why I highly recommend tracking your mini habits, because it's actually attributed to Jerry Seinfeld, where he said he would write a joke every day and put a big red X on the calendar to denote that he had made a joke that day. He actually denied that in a Reddit Ask Me Anything, but besides the point, it's a very good concept.
As it goes, because with apocryphal stories and quotes all over the internet.
Yeah, seriously. As you look at your calendar, you see 13 X's in a row. You're like, oh man, I have to keep this going. And when it's something as simple as a mini habit, you're more than likely to keep that going. And then your streak can get pretty massive. And that is just a reinforcing tool for A, you're able to do this and you have proven that. And B, you really don't want to screw up this awesome run you've been on.
And do you do that yourself? Like, do you have I'm assuming it, most people probably would benefit from just going offline with this, having an actual calendar that you can fill in so you can look at it every day. Or I guess you could use an app. I mean, I guess it just depends on what you prefer.
I really prefer the big calendar, like one of those massive desk calendars, yeah. Just because it's so huge and easily visible. And it's also tactile when you mark off your day. You can definitely use an app for this as well. And a lot of people have had success with that. So I would say if you can fit it into your lifestyle, I would use some sort of physical calendar. I think the physical presence really helps with this sort of thing. But just being realistic with how people's lives are today, probably a cell phone app is what people will use.
Yeah.
And that's fine too.
Yeah. Or I mean, I guess you need a special app. You could just use whatever calendar app, I'm sure. I mean, I don't do it personally, but I'm sure you could do that, right? You can probably fill in days with colors or do something that would indicate you have done what you wanted to do.
Yeah. You could.
You know, and this also, all this kind of reminds me of, you probably heard this quote. I don't remember who said it. It probably whoever we think said it just stole it from somebody who stole it from somebody, who knows. But that we tend to underestimate what we can do over a long period of time and overestimate what we can do in a short period of time.
Yeah, I believe that was Tony Robbins. Yeah, that's a great quote. And I think that's true.
Yeah, I think that's very true. I mean, I've kind of learned to condition my, I guess, expectations just over, you know, all the random projects I've had my hands in over the years, that everything takes longer and more money and more hardship than you think going into it. And you never quite get as much done every day as you hope that you can get done, at least most of the time, or want to get done. But you just learn to live with that, because you see that if you just keep at it, eventually you can have a pretty impressive amount of achievements behind you that you didn't necessarily feel that way going through it. It was kind of just a pain in the ass. By at least half the time, you were just kind of annoyed, but you just keep going and you put in enough of that. And then you look back, you're like, oh, actually, hey, this is pretty cool.
Yeah, I'm a living example of this. I honestly consider myself to be a very lazy person naturally. That means I not only do I not want to work out, but I don't want to work at all, as in write anything. But because I've just been consistent, I've written 3 internationally best-selling books. And it's still kind of weird to me, but that just shows you the power of consistency and sticking to something. Even though no day is individually impressive, it can produce an impressive result in the long term.
Absolutely. What would you prefer to do, or some part of you or whatever, what would you prefer to do with your time if not working or doing something productive?
If I'm left to my own natural disposition, I'm going to be entertaining myself probably to death, like just playing video games or watching TV or gambling or something. That's just...
Yeah. It's just
being honest.
You know it though, and you're just like, I can't give over to the dark side fully.
Yeah, I mean that's why.
Until you get that socialist universal basic income, bro. For now, you have to. Yeah, right. For now, you have to work as a part of the evil patriarchal capitalistic overlords.
Yeah, maybe I'll move to Europe.
No, I think you just moved to California now. What is it? It's got announced. It was like Stockton or something. They're going to be rolling out.
I am literally in Los Angeles right now.
Oh shit. I mean, you're close. You're almost there. You can probably just hang out there. It's California. It'll find its way to you. Unless the money runs out. That's always the problem. But hey, who knows? Maybe the Ponzi scheme will last long enough.
Yeah. And there's always bailouts.
That's true. Federal will probably step in. Anyways, no, that's great. I mean, I agree that you, even though I don't like track my adherence to my things, there's still a subconscious effect of I do what I do on the days that I do it. And I just don't want to break that. I don't want to deviate from my routine. That to me is painful and just distasteful, not, you know, going and doing the things that, you know, that require effort and require discomfort and some things that maybe are, that seem unpalatable at first.
Yeah. And I think you've reached that point. I mean, dude, I've seen pictures of you. You're a beast. But I should also say that I'm actually the same way now with exercise and writing specifically. While my natural disposition is a lazy human thing, I don't think I could go very long without exercising, without feeling very frustrated and upset. And the same goes for writing. I just write every day out of habit now. And that's the power of habit, is that you become a different person.
Very true. And how do you know when something has become a habit? Like people listening, what are some cues to where you can pat yourself on the back and say, cool, this is a pretty well ingrained behavior pattern now?
Based on my research and experience, I think it starts with decreased resistance. You could say that maybe it's a young habit when you no longer resist a behavior as much as you used to. And that's what I experienced with exercise after 6 months of doing at least one push-up a day. One day I suddenly realized, whoa, I don't actually resist exercise nearly as much as I used to because, and this is the second thing, it's sort of a normal behavior. It's something you expect to do. It's not something that you have to consciously decide every time to do.
Yeah, like you know that there's just no way you're not going to do it. I'd say that for me is when I know that something is really locked in, where there's no question in my mind.
Yeah.
You know, there's no question right now as I sit here that I'm waking up at 5:30 tomorrow and I read in the morning first thing and then I go to the gym. Like, that's happening. I'm either going to be dead or that's going to happen. that those are pretty much the two options.
Yeah, like Jack LaLanne was 97. He died the day after he did a 2-hour workout with pneumonia, and I think he was 97 years old. So that's a habit.
I didn't know that actually, that he had pneumonia right at the end. I mean, I know of him. I don't really know his story. I just know some of the feats that he did. But yeah, that's a hashtag dedication.
Yeah, that's Man, it's impressive.
Yeah. So are there any other mini habits that you've used in your life? Like anything maybe related to diet? Have you paid attention to that at all? Even if it's just eating more nutritious foods, maybe not going as far as counting calories and macros and getting super into the details.
So I naturally eat a healthy diet. I've always, since I was about 20, I've been interested in that. So that's not something that I've had to change about myself. But there are definitely a lot of mini habits that can help a person get to that point. One of which would be just trying to eat an extra serving of fresh fruits or vegetables per day.
So start there, just one, right? Like, and to put that in perspective, we're talking about like a cup of blueberries. Just start there. Eat a cup of blueberries every day. And you can make it specific. You can say at 9 a.m., I'm going to eat a cup of blueberries, or, you know, even start at a half cup, whatever.
Yeah. And you can also do it in the grocery store. Do your shopping as usual and then replace one unhealthy item with a healthier item, such as maybe taking out donuts and putting in pineapple, which is also delicious, but a lot healthier.
And that also, I'd say, for depending on what you're trying to do with your diet, most people that have dietary struggles are trying to lose weight, of course. And that's an easy place to start. I mean, obviously, it does come down to energy balance, and macronutrient balance matters as well. Not all calories are the same as far as how they impact our body composition. But if all that is daunting, you can start with something simple like, you know, stop drinking calories, for example. If you want to replace your caloric beverage with something else sweet, that's one of the reasons why BCAAs are popular. A lot of people, that satisfies their sweet tooth. It's just tasty, zero calorie water. So, you know, I know just from working with a lot of people that, for example, is an easy place for many people to start. If you're drinking calories right now, especially if you're drinking a significant amount of calories, you have easy weight loss if you just stop drinking calories. And you can replace that with, if you want to be fancy, you can do the fruit water. But if you want to just have something simple, sweet, and tasty, just get a tasty BCAA and drink that with water instead of the Coke or, you know, whatever kind of caloric beverage, fruit juice. Even fruit juice is like shit. You might as well just be drinking water or eating fruit.
Yeah, seriously. And there's, I think it's called Hint Water, which is like, it's just water with fruit flavor. I think it's zero calories.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know which one you're talking about, but there are a number of them out there. That's true too. You have just prepackaged stuff that you could buy, which is not ideal, I guess, if nothing else from a financial perspective, because you're going to be overpaying a lot for that. But if that's, you know, if that's an easy way to start, sure, just get a good zero calorie flavored water.
Yeah. You could just get an infuser and do it yourself if you want to save money too.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. What are your thoughts on... this isn't something that I don't think you've written about it. Maybe you have. If you have, I haven't seen it. I don't know if anybody has, but it's just something I've been thinking about recently. I guess the best term for it would be like meta habits, so to speak. Habits that are not specifically like, oh, I want to... I mean, it could be specifically an exercise habit, or just some very particular behavior that you want to kind of instantiate in you, as opposed to something that, like, for example, something that transfers, that's a skill or an ability that kind of makes you better at a whole wide range of things in your life. For example, just being able to experience discomfort, to be able to push through pain and discomfort would be an example. I think a meta habit that if you can develop that, it's going to benefit probably every aspect of your life.
Yeah, that's a great question. I've got two thoughts. One on the discomfort one, I've actually written a book called How to Be an Imperfectionist that talks about that. And it suggests doing, well, I guess there are multiple types of discomfort. So one would be kind of the need for approval discomfort, where you're seeking approval constantly and you feel uncomfortable when you don't have it. So a mini habit in that regard would be like lying down on the floor in a public place, which is completely harmless, but also socially unacceptable for some reason. That sort of thing could train you to not need that approval and to learn to be okay being uncomfortable socially. So that can also be modified for other types of discomfort, I think. In regards to the meta habit, I would say meditation is actually one of the best, because meditating, which is just breathing in and breathing out and focusing on your breaths, and then getting distracted and then refocusing on your breaths. That's training yourself to focus and also to be mindful, both of which are extremely helpful when trying to change or modify your behavior.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny because what passes for meditation now is, this is kind of like the pop meditation. I think Buddhist monks would laugh at us, right? Because what they do is a lot harder. You're talking about hours and hours of being in uncomfortable positions. And, you know, there's a lot more that goes into it. I think it's kind of, I don't know, just amusing that what now passes for minutes, I guess it's more just indicative of, I think, our ever shortening attention spans and just our never ending quest for easier, faster, more rewarding for less is what now is meditation is actually what you said is just sit there and chill the fuck out for 10 minutes. Like just take deep breaths. Get that coke addled squirrel that runs around in your brain 24/7. Just like chill it the fuck out for 10 minutes. How about that? Which I agree. I think that's very important that you learn how to control your attention. I just also think it's kind of funny though, that's called meditation now, when in the traditional sense, that's not meditation at all. It wouldn't qualify.
It's really a microcosm of a mini habits. Like
it's like the mini habit approach to meditation, right? Okay, fine. You can't actually meditate like a true, you know, Buddhist monk because that's hard, but can you just sit there and like breathe and not freak out for 5 minutes? How about that?
Yeah. Yeah. Like nobody's going to call one push up a workout, but it enables you to show up just like, I could not do what monks do right now, but I could breathe for 5 to 10 minutes and not do anything else.
And what have you noticed in the way of benefits since you've been doing that?
I haven't been that consistent with this one. I think it's because I don't care that much. Even though I see the value in it, it just hasn't stuck. And that's something people might find with many habits is, you really have to want it, whatever you're trying to do.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, just to that point, do you think that's because maybe you actually don't struggle with it? Or you think is it more just the value is more abstract? And so you're kind of doing it almost as like a leap of faith in hopes that it does something somehow.
Yeah, that's a great observation. It is definitely more abstract, more difficult to see the benefit. As opposed to exercise, which a lot of the benefits come later, but you feel that you've done something to your body, you know?
Yeah. I mean, you also do get the immediate benefit, right? You get the endorphins, you get the chemical high.
Yeah. And I do feel a positive benefit from meditation, but I am a naturally pretty relaxed guy. So I don't think that I need it as much as others, though I still would say that it's good for me and I should do it.
Yeah, I'm in the same boat. I've tried it. Again, it doesn't, I wouldn't even call it meditating, breathing exercises. I'll give it that. And yeah, sure. I think it's good. But for whatever reason, I just don't struggle with focus and concentration. I'm good at doing deep work. At least I'm fairly good at it by, I think, most people's standards. So, you know, after just 5 or 6 times of doing it, I'm like, eh. Do I need this? No. Like I honestly do not feel like I will. I feel like I'm way beyond the point of diminishing returns with this. And that 10 minutes would be better spent reading or working. So.
But then again, for some other people, it can be a life-changing thing.
I know. That's why I tried it. Cause I had heard a lot of people had emailed me and, you know, shared their experiences. And I was like, wow, I mean, if 15 or even 20 minutes a day of breathing exercises or 10 minutes or whatever it is, could create a similar effect for me, if we're speaking in relative terms, sure. So that's why I gave it a try, but I didn't really notice anything. Maybe I did it more than Sam, maybe 2 weeks or so and just noticed no difference. And I even keep like a spreadsheet where I kind of quantify. I got this from a book called Triggers by Marshall Goldsmith, I think. One of the things I liked from that book, an idea of keeping basically a spreadsheet where you rank different elements of your life that you care about, the things that you want to focus most on. And for me, that's a mixture of strengths and weaknesses in terms of, I guess, on the weaknesses, it's more in terms of my character and strengths is maybe it's character-based, but it's more behavior. Like, have I really done my best to improve my relationship with my wife, improve my relationship with my kids, be positive in my work? Enjoy my work and generally stay positive things. And you rate yourself on a scale of 1 to 10 every day. And it's not perfect, obviously, but it's actually fairly accurate because our brains are good at thinking analogously. I even have like a quantified metric-esque type of approach to how am I doing in general, at least in the areas that I care most about. Certain areas I just don't care. Like, I don't really have much of a social life, and I don't give a shit right now to have much of a social life because I care more about what I'm working toward over the next few years. So that's not even on my list. Like, how have I worked to deepen relationships with friends? I know that would be good for me, but it takes time that I'm not willing to give it. My whole point with all that is when I incorporate new things into my life, I have like all these numbers are graphed. I like to just see, make little notes. Here's what I started doing at this point and how over the next, it could be as short as 2 weeks or it could be as long as 2 months or so, depending on like how much this thing matters to me in terms of an experiment. How has it impacted my life? That's at least I'd say an evidence-based way of approaching it. Meditation for me is one of those things where I didn't feel any different and I didn't see any difference in how I kind of like to track my life. So I just ditched it.
Oh, that's really interesting. Have you done this with any other things besides meditation? I'm sure you've done it with, exercise is such a huge part of your life.
Yeah.
Have you tracked that or is that just
that's something I've been doing for, that's something I've been doing for so long. I would have no reason to stop, not even if I didn't, it's part of my job now, obviously, but even if it weren't, nothing would change in that regard because I really do think it's worth the time investment. And I don't put that much time into it. On the high end, we're talking probably 6 hours a week, and on the low end, like 4. And I just know that it helps support everything else. And I would definitely I've built up so much momentum over the years that I could stop exercising for a bit probably and still have good levels of mental acuity and high energy and good mood and stuff. But eventually I would lose it. I mean, it's just physiology. It is what it is. So, that wouldn't change. But, silly things like taking cold showers, right? I've written about this. Basically, there's no physiological, the long story short is you're not going to get better muscle recovery or higher testosterone levels or prettier hair or nails or any of that shit from cold showers. But I do like it because they suck, especially if you live somewhere that's cold. So I live in Virginia and we have real winters here and the water it's fucking cold. I mean, it's ice water is what it feels like. And I like that habit because coming back to like a meta habit is it's a little that has trained me to become more comfortable with doing things that just kind of suck, basically. And I like that because I know how important that is in pretty much every area of life. And so I've noticed, for example, that has made me a little bit more enjoy my work a little bit more and be a little bit more positive in general, because these days a lot of my work feels like chores. I mean, there's just a lot of stuff now between, with running a few companies. I actually don't really like running companies. I don't like managing people. I just don't like it. I don't think I ever will. I don't think I can change that about myself, but I can learn to just do things I don't like and not be a whiny little bitch about it. You know what I mean? Just do it because it needs to be done, and not do it begrudgingly, but actually be okay with it because I know that, it serves something, a goal or a purpose that I do care about, even though I don't think I'll ever be that person to be looking forward to a lot of the things that I do these days. And there are certain elements of my work that I still look forward to, but I really do think I've gotten to a point where I could do 10, 12, 14 hours of things that I don't look forward to and don't inherently enjoy every day. Simply, if I don't need that strong of a reason anymore, which I think is cool. And I don't attribute that all to just cold showering, but I just know from psychological research as well that what we do informs who we are a lot more than the other way around. Like, a lot of people think that they just have to change their mind and they have to get into the right mindset before they can start taking the right actions. And research has shown this is totally backwards. You have to, if you want to change the subjective, just change the objective. That's the easiest way to do it, which is one of the reasons why I like mini habits. Just start doing something. And then you will, just because of cognitive bias, like if your actions are in conflict with your ideas or your ideas and attitudes are going to conform to your actions if you just keep doing the actions. So, and that works for good and evil, right? It works for good things and bad things. So in the case of mini habits, you're using it for good. If you start doing those pushups every day, what are you telling yourself? You're telling yourself that you're the kind of person that can exercise every day. And I think that, you know, you're telling yourself other things that are positive and it's more subconscious and your attitudes naturally change. You don't have to even think about it. You don't have to read books about becoming a more positive person, this, that, or whatever. You just naturally start to change for the better. So coming back to cold showering, that's something, again, I think helps train a meta habit. And so does exercise, because exercise is fucking hard always. It's never enjoyable to squat heavy weight for, you know, until your legs are burning. That's never enjoyable unless, I mean, I guess maybe some people get off on the masochism of it. But for me, it's not like, yeah, in that moment, I'm not going, oh my God, you know, I don't have the Arnold. It's not like, you know, where it's like, oh, I'm coming all day. I come every set, every rep. Nah, like coming for me is a lot. Yeah, that's that. And working out, there's no correlation there between the pleasures of coming and the hardships of working out. It just, right. It just,
I'm with you on that one.
I wish. How fucking awesome would that be, right?
Oh, man. Set it up.
Yeah, no shit. I mean, where's rewire my brain. So cold showering and coming back to that meta habit of just doing stuff that you don't really like. There's no physiological payoff. I mean, I wrote about this recently. A lot of that, the purported health benefits of cold showering is just nonsense. It's bullshit. It's pseudoscience. There's really no good reason to do it, other than to just fucking be uncomfortable. That's it. That's the only reason to do it. And if you can do it there, if you can dodge a wrench, you can dodge a ball, right?
Yeah. I actually did a cold shower experiment for 30 days just because, and I did find it made my skin a little bit better, maybe less dried out. But yeah, I think that's a really valuable thing to try, especially because of the society we live in today where if you're an American, everything in our society is based around comfort. Like we have machines doing everything for us. We can order food easily. It's easy to get too comfortable. Any sort of discomfort is just repulsive to you. And that can be very detrimental to what you actually want to do with your life, which often requires a great deal of discomfort.
Absolutely. What were your thoughts on when you did it for 30 days in that regard?
So I did find it very valuable. I felt like I had developed some sort of extra resilience. Just, I think because of what you said, I was getting more comfortable being uncomfortable because I was doing it to myself every day. There were some really interesting sub-experiments within the experiment. One time I turned the cold water on immediately, so it just hit me right off the bat, and that was not pleasant.
That's what I do. I just have fucking just and also that, I let the shower run for like 2 minutes to make sure it's as cold as it can get.
Oh man, that was, I hated that, but hey, maybe that's what I need. But I think if people are maybe babies like me, they could try like I think it's called a Scottish shower, where you start the shower warm and then for the last 10 to 30 seconds you turn it to cold. At least for starting out, that's easier to take.
And the only reason to go beyond that, honestly, is just to make it more uncomfortable. Again, you're probably not going to benefit from it physiologically at all. And I mean, in case anybody listening is wondering about that, the long story short is, if you get into like winter swimming, where you're going to be spending long periods of time out in the freezing cold and you're going to be swimming around in freezing water, there's actually some research that shows that, and this makes sense, like your body gets hardier. You're probably going to get sick a bit less and, you know, you might burn a bit more calories than usual. but a few minutes of cold water is not enough to do that. So the only reason, again, to take it up another notch is simply to go, all right, let's make myself even more uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. And so that, yeah, I mean, that's an example, coming back to that meta habits, one that I think, I mean, Stephen Pressfield, you know, the dude who wrote The War of Art and Turning Pro, blah, blah, blah. I think it was one of his books or an interview or something. He just basically said that the number one skill he has learned, and that he, I guess, most attributes his success to, is the ability to suffer. That's it. Just to sit down every day and suffer through whatever he needs to suffer through, to put words on the page and, you know, move the needle a little bit further and do the things that he needs to do. And he has pretty much disabused himself of any real desire or need for comfort or even pleasure or joy out of his work, because he's found that it provides so little in that regard. It provides satisfaction, and he has come to value satisfaction over momentary pleasure, but he gets very little pleasure out of his work. And I can relate to that. I mean, I wouldn't say I'm not necessarily in that position, but I can understand that. I can definitely understand that.
Yeah, I can relate to that too. I think for me, the ability to suffer, which I will admit, my ability to suffer is not impressive. Again, that goes back to the lazy disposition and video games and whatnot. But the ability to kind of put myself in those cold waters, which I've done through many habits, has enabled me to get to the point where I would say I do enjoy my work quite a bit now.
Yeah, that's the key, is you just get to that point where you get enough, you have enough of a drive to keep it going, right? So it could be the joy that you get out of doing it, or it could be the reason that you're doing it, like why, what are you working toward? What's your goal? What's your purpose? So yeah, I mean, again, for myself, a fair amount of my work, I don't think I'll ever really get much joy from, but I get satisfaction from it because I know it's contributing to something that I do care about. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah. Certain parts of work are just torturous, but other parts are kind of fun. And overall, it is satisfying. So yeah, I agree with that.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And that, you know, that's also, I think, something that's important to know, because I think it's just a human thing, right? We always have that grass is greener on the other side type of mentality. And that's why a lot of people end relationships and then wonder why after years and years, they have this daisy chain of failed relationships, and they don't realize they are the only common denominator. Like, it's something wrong with them. We all have this built into us where, because of, I guess, the hedonic treadmill type of adaptation, we tend to, whatever was once interesting and stimulating becomes boring and normal. And it's easy to think that, oh, if I just had this other thing, if I just was doing this other thing, or if I had this other person, then, you know, I would be happy or I would be satisfied. And I think that's more of a fantasy and a delusion than anything else. The opportunity for satisfaction is right where you are. You know what I mean? And that isn't to say that some relationships deserve to end and some work isn't a good fit, but I'd say that more often than not, that's not exactly what's going on. It's more the grass is greener on the other side effect. There's probably a fancy term for that, but
yeah, that's I think that sort of hedonic treadmill mindset is what leads people to things like drug addictions, because they're looking for that, you know, savior thing, that savior element in their life. And nothing is ever going to reach that status in our lives. There are always going to be ups and downs. And anyone who's looking for that constant high is probably going to look to a substance to directly trigger that in their brain.
Absolutely. Or it could be, if it's not drugs, it's sex, or it's video games, or anything that gives you a nice hit of dopamine, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Great. Well, I mean, those are all the things I had on my list. Now I've kind of hijacked this and babbled all kinds of shit. Is there anything else that on the mini habit topic that we haven't covered that you think should be mentioned?
First of all, I just want to say I really enjoyed what you said, so thank you. As far as mini habits, I feel like we covered the gist of it.
Great. Well, where can people find you, find your book, find your work? I mean, I'm obviously in the intro, I mentioned the book, so people probably know, but we haven't mentioned it throughout the interview, so it's worth closing with it.
Yeah. So my personal website is stephenguise.com, STEPHENGUISE. That's where I write my blog every week. All my books are on all major e-retailers, most prominently Amazon. They've got, 90% of the market? No, I'm on all major retailers, but Amazon is over 90%. It's crazy.
Same.
Yeah.
Perfect. Perfect. All right. Well, yes, everybody listening, if you found this discussion interesting, I highly recommend you check out the book. Good information, well-researched and easy to understand, easy to apply. I definitely recommend you check it out. And Stephen, thank you for taking the time. I appreciate it.
Yeah, Mike, I really enjoyed it. Thanks for having me on.
Hey there, it is Mike again. I hope you enjoyed this episode and found it interesting and helpful. And if you did and don't mind doing me a favor and want to help me make this the most popular health and fitness podcast on the internet, then please leave a quick review of it on iTunes or wherever you're listening from. This not only convinces people that they should check the show out, it also increases its search visibility and thus helps more people find their way to me and learn how to build their best bodies ever too. And of course, if you want to be notified when the next episode goes live, then just subscribe to the podcast and you won't miss out on any of the new goodies. Lastly, if you didn't like something about the show, then definitely shoot me an email at mike@muscleforlife.com and share your thoughts on how you think it could be better. I read everything myself and I'm always looking for constructive feedback, so please do reach out. All right, that's it. Thanks again for listening to this episode, and I hope to hear from you soon. And lastly, this episode is brought to you by me. Seriously though, I'm not big on promoting stuff that I don't personally use and believe in, so instead, I'm going to just quickly tell you about something of mine. Specifically, my fish oil supplement, Triton. Now, Triton is a high-potency, high-purity, 100% re-esterified triglyceride fish oil with added vitamin E to prevent oxidation and rancidity, and natural lemon oil to prevent the noxious fish oil burps that we all know and hate. Furthermore, Triton is made from sustainably fished deep-water anchovies and sardines and is molecularly distilled to remove natural toxins and contaminants. So if you want to optimize your mental and physical health and performance and reduce the risk of disease and dysfunction, then you want to head over to www.legionathletics.com and pick up a bottle of Triton today. And just to show how much I appreciate my podcast peeps, use the coupon code podcast at checkout and you will save 10% on your entire order. And lastly, you should also know that I have a very simple 100% money back guarantee that works like this. You either love my stuff or you get your money back, period. You don't have to return the products. You don't have to fill out forms. You don't have to jump through any other hoops or go through any other shenanigans. So you really can't lose here. Head over to www.legionathletics.com now. Place your order and see for yourself why my supplements have thousands of rave reviews all over the internet. And if for whatever reason, they're just not for you, contact us and we will give you a full refund on the spot.